Ladies and gentlemen, very special guest. As you can tell, Secret Chris is not with us today. I guess he had more important plans. Did he go to Maine, Steve? Where did he go? He went somewhere. I hope he didn't go up to Maine because you get lost up there. He goes to Maine a lot because he has family there. And I'm like, that's where all of Stephen King's books are written about Maine. I'm not going up there. There's something creepy going on up there.
Maine's a very interesting part of the world. You know, I got some good friends that live up there, and it's funny that you mentioned that. You know, there's kind of, as I always tell everybody, there's Portland and then there's Maine.
Yeah, exactly. It's this weird mix of Canada and New England and then also their own thing. It's just a very weird place. There's a mysticism about it.
Yes.
But we are joined today by the legendary Dave Spiert. What is your actual title at EPC? Chief Operating Officer at EPC, Ernesto Perez Carrillo Cigars. And Dave, I was lucky enough to be put in touch with Dave with our mutual friend, Big Jim.
Yep.
Big Jim Charlie, who's been a recurring guest and my boss. I'm going to call him recurring guest. He's my boss. you know, former guest of the show. But Dave, thank you so much.
I will tell you, I'm disappointed because I know you did one recently with him where we were talking about the cigar that we're doing.
We were.
And you said your bonus this year is based on his number of visits, but I guess he on your show, but mm-hmm. I guess he had to bow out today. So
yeah, we were gonna try to, because we have a way to set it up to have like three people for an episode, and I'm like, it was gonna be great because I love being able to just watch people talk, and because of the history of you and Jim and like that. Rat-a-tat. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, this would have been a great. I could just sit back, interject every couple of minutes with something, and then just watch them talk, throw out a question, let's watch you guys answer. Those are some of my, like, I love being able to do that. But Jim, you know, I guess he had to work from home today. So yep. I got to once again put the weight of JR on my shoulders.
I'll try to help you
and carry it through the finish line. But yeah, so let's talk. So we had talked about the cigar in the previous episode. We'll get into it because now it's getting its full launch. But before that, Dave, take us through your journey through the cigar industry. Everyone has some kind of interesting tale, whether they're born into a cigar family or, oh, I worked in a retail shop. I think Jim probably is the only one who has like, oh, yeah, I worked in insurance before. Like, but usually someone has some kind of fun tale. So how did you get to where you are today?
So it's interesting. Actually, Jim and I have a very, very similar background. Mm. So I started in the world of finance. I got very interested in it. My dad, believe it or not, was an insurance sales guy like Jim.
Okay.
Insurance was interesting for me, but not what I wanted to do. I was more into the analytical side of finance. So I did a lot of, financial planning to start with. And then I developed something that revolved around retirement plans, which I'm not going to get into. It's long, it's boring. And if you need to sleep, I can tell you what to go read.
My one of my best friends is a financial advisor, so I'll put you guys in touch.
Yeah, perfect. But I started smoking cigars when I was 16 and a half. Hmm. My dad was a big cigar smoker, and he had a cabinet at home. And one day I come home from football practice with a buddy of mine. It's a Saturday afternoon. My dad's going to make steaks on the grill. And, he's like, yeah, And I'm like, we had a great practice. And, our first game is in 2 weeks, and we're all pumped up. And I look at him, I'm like, dude, you want a cigar?
Ooh.
And he goes, never had one. I said, me either. But yeah, let's do it. So I go into his cabinet. I open the cabinet up. And I knew that, like, these were all his cigars. And the one he always had this go-to, like it was a special occasion cigar, was this one on the first shelf front and center. So I grabbed it. Well, that sucker was about that long. And I said, you want one? He goes, that's a little too long for me. I go, yeah, me too. But I know my dad really likes it. In my head, I'm going, I know my dad likes this cigar. So I pulled the drawer
open. I know this is my dad's favorite, so this is the one we're going to steal.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I was a smart kid.
Oh, yeah.
Knew that it was a good cigar because it was his favorite. So I opened the drawer up, and he had a pair of Davidoff scissors in there.
Oh, wow. So your dad was like a cigar,
cigar guy. And I made the grave mistake. I took the scissors, kind of went, cut it right in half. Gave him the front half, clipped the back because my dad taught me already how to do that. Walk outside and we light up. My dad comes out with a big plate of steaks and going to the grill, and he kind of looks back at me and he says, what you doing? And I'm like, smoking a cigar? He goes, yeah, I see that. Now, my dad was very interesting. He never yelled.
Right.
I was in trouble when he said the following words, we will talk later.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. So, long story short, the cigar made my friend sick. He went home. My dad took me and said, listen, you're never allowed to touch another cigar until you read one of these three books. And he handed me three books. One of the books was The Black Book by Zeno Davidoff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I read that book that night, and I went in the morning, and he was in the kitchen, and I tossed it on the table, and I said, read that one. Of course, my dad goes, baloney, and opens it up, asks me a question. I answered. He goes, that was an easy one. Hold on. He found like six or seven questions, and he said, all right, you know, I guess you get to smoke a cigar with me. And since, you know, I was in Boston at the time, and I grew up most of my life up there. He was a big Patriots fan. We watched the Patriots game back when they were not a team, and now we're not a team anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, also like this year?
Yeah, exactly. So, circle of life.
Yeah. You guys had a good run.
And I got to smoke a cigar with him, and he asked me, do you understand why, da, 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 and I explained to him, yeah, I understood. And so everybody here that's listening knows the reason he was a little bit ticked off was not so much that I cut it in half, but it was a Hoy de Monterey double Corona from Cuba.
Oh,
so he was a little bit peeved because those are still hard to get, you know,
yeah.
But back then they were very, very hard to get. But, you know, that's my entree into cigars. So for years I was in the world of finance, you know, did what I did, and Monica, my wife, at that time was my girlfriend, and I asked her to marry me. And Monica looked at me and she goes, I'll make you a deal. I'll marry you. But, you know, you're super stressed. You are running a company of yours. And I basically want you to not do that anymore because I want to grow old and die with someone. At the rate you're going, you might not make it till tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know? So I kind of said, you know, okay. And it timed out right because I was having somebody that was trying to buy the company, and it timed out right. And so I spent a little time with a client of mine, helping him run his business. The economy caught up. This was 2008 at that point. Economy caught up with what was going on in the world of finance. He was a commercial lender. So I got let go and, you know, bounced around a little bit, just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I started in this industry with Zycar.
You know, okay.
It was an accident. You know,
this was back when Zycar was Zycar?
Yeah, this was back when Zycar was Zycar. Hmm. And I started with Zycar back in, I interviewed in 2009, started with them in 2010.
Oh, that's when I started in the industry.
Yeah. And it was actually, you know, I laugh, but I blame Monica, my wife, because she looked at me. She goes, you love cigars. Why don't you get in the cigar industry?
So, that's a good wife right there.
That's a really good
there's
wife.
There's no one. You know, that's a rarity in this,
so,
in this
so
world.
So she's like, why don't you do that? Because you love cigars so much. And I said, okay. So I didn't think of it. It was just an accident how I tripped across this. I happened to be out on a career board, and I noticed it. And I kind of went, you know, and sometimes you got to follow when the universe throws shit in your face, pardon the way that came out, you kind of got to follow what the universe is telling you to do, right? So I did, and I spent 3 years with Zycar, and as much as I love accessories, and I think they're great to have, and I'm a collector of accessories, I got tons of them, this is my love, the leaf. You know, this is my passion. This is, I you know, so it happened to play out that someone that worked for Zycar started working for Ernesto, and they wanted to grow a sales team. So I was their second hire outside of the family.
Oh, wow.
And I started with them. It's going to be 11 years this April.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I started with them 11 years ago, and I've started as a territory manager, a rep, a sales guy, worked my way up, and I'm now the chief operating officer. And
you got to see that whole, you know, the expansion. I mean, obviously after Ernesto left General, you know, he had like, you know, New Wave and everything. It was still, you know, Dusk. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was really when he did, you know, like La Historia, Encore and Pledge, which we'll get into, that, you know, this rapid expansion. And I feel like finally getting the credit he deserved, because I always felt like he was one of the unsung heroes of the 90s, even though I wasn't around. But like, he was one of the guys who really helped push the 90s boom.
Yeah.
But I feel like the past 7-8 years, he's really gotten his due and is elevated to that level. So it's cool that you got to be there for that, for that big expansion.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, Ernesto was a pioneer back in the day. You know, when everybody was making a Connecticut cigar, he decided, you know, oh, you guys can go play on the right field side of the baseball diamond, but I'm going to go play on the left.
And I'm going to be the only one here.
Yeah, and I'm going to be the only one here.
And, you know, I know you guys have talked about it a couple times on the show and different stuff, but, you know, with El Rico Habano, which was, you know, a cigar. And I remember smoking my first El Rico. I was like, what the heck is this?
It was, you know, it was like nuclear. It was so, but so good. It wasn't just one of those cigars where they just pack it with Lajero that's like not aged so it tastes strong. It was very good, but insanely strong.
Especially for the day.
Oh, for the time, absolutely. Right.
Today, you would smoke an El Rico, even if that same exact cigar, same blend, same tobacco, same air, you smoke and go, wow, this is a really nice medium cigar. Yeah. But when you were smoking, when I remember that, you know, amongst other things, my dad owned a corner store with a partner that he sold a lot of cigars in, hence why he liked cigars so much too. When I remember that Macanudo, I worked there in the summer, Macanudo was the number one best-selling cigar, you know, and that was just this mild.
It was a smooth. The doctors smoked it. Like it was like the golf course. You like know, everyone.
Then they came out with that Reserve and they put Arnold on the cover with it. He was smoking that one. If you remember that, that time, still a little bit more potent, but still a smooth, you know, elegant, you know, not strong cigar at all. And the world was filled with these mild Connecticut cigars. That was the number one smoking cigar on the planet at the time. And here he comes with, let me show you something else.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, to so call them the cigar geeks of the time, they would smoke that cigar and be like, what the hell is this? You know, this is insane.
It's such a different experience.
Yeah.
Like, if you like something that's stronger, you can still smoke something that's on the more mellow side, like one of those smooth Dominican Connecticuts, and you can still appreciate it for what it is. It might not be your jam, but you could still appreciate what went into it. But if you just like something melt, like, because that was a big contingent, especially back then, of like, I don't want anything too crazy, I don't want anything too strong, too flavorful, because it was the 90s, it was more for status, and you know, you have the label on it. So you really had to know the inner workings of a cigar and what to look for to appreciate a cigar like that.
Right.
Like the El Rico and the La Gloria's at the time.
You know, then of course he decides to bring La Gloria and buys the trademark and in here in the US, he brings that to life. You know, and then of course, you know, and you as consumers, and I know you've had your conversations about this on your shows here, you do have to give Cigar Aficionado and Marvin Shanken credit changing the way this industry was.
Absolutely.
And is today.
Absolutely.
And what it's become.
Absolutely.
And it's funny because I love to tell this story. It's one of my favorite stories. So Ernesto, historically, he's a coffee guy. Loves his coffee. Loves his coffee. All right. And religiously, Ernesto, the first day of every show, the first morning of every day of the show, goes and gets a cup of coffee. Well, he's at, you know, at that time, it was called the RTDA. It's changed to the IPCPR, now the PCA, which is our big trade show in the industry, as you know, and a lot of consumers know. He's at the show, and he decides to go get his cup of coffee for him. He gets one because Elena, his wife, is working with him at the booth. Gets one for his wife, and, you know, the magazine had come out. There's a whole story about Marvin visiting him and all this.
Yeah.
And, you know, magazine comes out, and he starts walking down with his coffee, turns down his aisle, and he looks down the aisle. There's this line of people. He's like, man, you know, he told me this. Yeah. He goes, man, wonder who all they're in line for. You know, wonder who they're lined up for. Must be somebody important.
Michael Jordan must be here.
Yeah, something like that. Like he didn't think, I mean, he's so humble. And this is the thing. If a consumer or anybody ever gets to meet him, he's one of the most humble people on the planet.
So I'm going to tell you, I interviewed him once a couple years ago. Right when the show was starting out. Super nice guy, very tough interview, because in this industry, the easiest interviews are, and I'm going to make fun of John for this because he's one of my favorite guys who talk.
Right.
Like, I love talkers because it makes my job easier. So when a guy could just talk about, and you know, listen, guys like John, Nick Melillo is a great, you know, storyteller and everything. It just makes my job easier. But Ernesto is so humble and doesn't want the spotlight, doesn't want the thing. And so it was interesting because I had such a reverence for him, but I was also nervous. I'm like, come on, man, you got to give me more than one word answers. Because I was just like, oh, what did you do this thing? And he was like, oh, I just made a nice thing. And I'm like, because he doesn't want that kind of accolades. He's just doing like his business.
And I want to finish the other story for a quick second, but he's kind of like Oz behind the curtain. You know, that's what he likes to be. You know, he likes to make great blends. He likes to be, if I could tell Ernesto what to do for the rest of his entire life on God's green earth, it would be, I want you to sit with all the pilons, all the tobacco, all the cigars, and that's all I want you to do.
Yeah.
Just play with tobacco, dude. Just
exactly.
Figure out your new fermentation, your this, your right. that. You know, that's his love. You know, but back to the RTDA, so he's walking down and people are going, congratulations, Ernesto. He goes, thanks. He keeps walking, congratulations. In his mind, he's like, for what? You know, and he keeps walking and finally he runs into a guy who's known him for a while. And he goes, Ernesto, congratulations. He leans over and he goes, for what? You know, and the guy opens up the magazine and shows that he had that spread.
Right.
You know, and for a lot of consumers who don't know, before the top 25, the spread
right.
in the summer issue was the
that
like
was the, that was the
you were knighted. Yeah, you were knighted as number one. You know, right. that's what it was, right? But they didn't technically have a top 25 list, but that was the important one. And right. he was in, I don't remember, it was the first or the second edition that was released magazine, but he was one of the very early ones where he got that spread. And he looked at the guy and he goes, wow, well, I better get to work, and took off down to the thing.
Yeah.
That magazine did so much for him as a blender, as a manufacturer, as a brand. He literally said they ran out of order forms that RTDA, that show. They were writing stuff on the back of cocktail napkins, scrap
right.
paper. He just goes, right. we were just, and whatever we could write on, we were writing.
And this was when he was still based in Miami, right? Was this when he was still based in Miami?
Mm-hmm.
So, because that's the, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that that's the store. I think it's another cigar shop now, but now it's across the street from El Titan de Bronze.
Yes, it's diagonally across the street.
Because when I was visiting El Titan de Bronze, I looked across the street and I'm like, why is that a La Gloria logo like on that building? I'm like, that has to be Ernesto's old spot.
Right. So Ernesto had that spot plus, I don't remember, and don't hold me to the number, like an additional 3 or 4, maybe 5 storefronts that went next to it
right.
because that's where he had his little retail, he had his offices in back, he had the warehouse, he had, you know, a small warehouse, he had fermentation, rolling, everything. Then at some point, his idea was he bought another building in Miami, which is the one our current company is in.
Right.
And he was going to go there, and that was where he was at that time for La Gloria and that company going to make cigars there. But after that trade show, he realized that's not even big enough.
No.
And I can't make fast enough because I don't have the capacity, the rollers, the employees,
right. Right.
And he went to the DR. So that was where he went down the first time to the DR. And this was early-ish 90s, maybe mid-90s. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to
that
remember
when. I think so.
So it was a few years ago that they were 25 years. So it's like 93, 94, somewhere in there. Don't hold me to the year, but that's about when it was.
So do you know my first ever cigar at 17 years old was an original, and I know it was an original release because a buddy of mine's dad was like, oh yeah, you guys can have it, and he was a big cigar smoker and collector. Maybe I had like a Black and Mild before this, but my first premium cigar was an original La Gloria Wavell, like from like 1996 or 97, something like that.
Yep.
And if it was, and I've always said this, if it was anything different, if it was anything lighter, if it was anything like one of those Macanudos at the time, I might not have become such a fan of cigars, but there was so much going on in it that I don't want to say I was hooked, you know, FDA, but I was impassioned by it.
Right. You know, and that's the thing, you know, I think what happens is a lot of new people to our lifestyle, new people to smoking cigars, it becomes a passion and it becomes something that they, you know, in their own ways, they taste certain things, they feel certain ways, they remember their first cigar experience, they remember who they were with, they remember, you know, they remember what they were doing, they remember, you know, lots of things, you know. And I've always said this, that the most memorable cigars are not necessarily the cigar itself.
Yeah.
It's what you were doing, who you were with, and what was going on at that time you smoked that cigar.
Because each puff, the aroma, the flavor can kind of trigger this nostalgic response mm-hmm. to. I was actually legitimately, when we were talking about Miami, just having one of, because I remember when I was in Miami a few years ago for work, and we were at like a cigar bar after, and I was smoking an Ernesto. I think I was smoking La Astoria, and it triggered like a thing. I'm like, oh yeah, right. I remember exactly where I was, and yeah. we were having drinks, and we were doing a whole yeah. thing. Yeah. You know, it's magical like that.
I remember when I bought my first La Gloria. It happened to be a Lavelle. I know exactly where I was, when I bought it, who I bought it from, and why I bought it. You know,
there was a time. So when I started in the industry, I think he was still like doing La Gloria, but it was definitely after the sale to General, because I started in 2010.
Right. So he sold to General in 99, yes. 1999. Started EP Carillo in 2009, 10 years later.
Okay, so maybe this was at the tail. So this was right after that. So we had just started Ernesto then.
Right.
But, like the strong, like I would put samples together like in the store, you know. And I'm like, oh, I want to do a full bodied 5-pack of all full bodied stuff. And everything I did a La Gloria Series R. I did an Arica Habano. I did Partagas Black,
yeah,
and I did a Hoya de Nicaragua, the Antonio. Yeah. But two of them were like, because my boss Felix, so if everyone's ever been into the Whippany store, you know Felix. He looks exactly like Carlito Fuente,
right?
Or I say he looks like Raul Julia, the right. thin little mustache.
Yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
He's
yeah.
a bit. He was El Rico. That was like his second cigar of the day, at like 10 a.m. That and a Pepsi.
Yeah.
He's gonna live to be 100 somehow, but he was just smoking, and he's like, oh, Pop, if you want to, you know, scorch your eyeball, smoke this. And I remember smoking El Rico, man, it was something.
Well, I had the privilege because I have a retailer, little south of here, that he has a personal collection of Ernesto cigars. He's been dealing with Ernesto for a long, long time, and I was visiting with him, and he goes, oh, I got something for you to smoke. And he pulled out an old box of El Ricos. I want to say the date stamp on this was either late 80s or early 90s.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sitting here thinking, man, this cigar probably isn't going to hold up. And I'm like, that's the way I'm thinking in my head. And I'm like,
It is tough with strong cigars.
And he goes to me, he goes, you're smoking this now. And if you smoke it now, I'll give you another one to take home. Hmm. I lit that thing up. I mean, I was shocked, dude.
I mean, that shows how strong they were, that they're holding up for that long.
It held up. I was blown away. It smoothed out a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and the oils and everything have melded a lot. But, man, it still was full of flavor, super complex. You know, that long finish that Ernesto likes. And that's the thing. You know, you mentioned that. His whole goal was a complex, creamy, long finished cigar.
Right.
That those are his signatures. That's what you like. That's what he likes. You know, that's the bullseye for him.
Right.
You know, so, you know, and you know, we're going to talk about this, that this actually deviates from that.
So I want to get into all of his, especially his you know, the recent number ones and everything. But I just want to say, I know that a lot of companies that we know and love today got their start in Florida, whether it be Tampa with Fuente and JC Newman, or Miami, like my father, Padron, Tatuaje. But for some reason in my head, if I had to pick someone who kind of epitomized the cigar boom, like Little Havana, Miami style, it's Ernesto. Mm-hmm. Like that's, if I had to make a movie about that era and I wanted to have a cigar manufacturer in it, it's Ernesto.
Yep.
And I love that about him. I love that he's been able to obviously evolve and change, because the industry has evolved and changed so much, and he's still not only relevant, but maybe even in his prime now, some might say, with all the number ones he's getting. But he was such a character of that time also, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this, like I said, this wave the past 5-6 years with these. I mean, listen, I'm going to say, as a working for a retailer and as a cigar fan, it does suck when a cigar that you really like gets number one. because good luck finding
working for the guy that has the number one. Yeah. It sucks for me too.
Good luck finding it. And I feel like, so he got number one in 2018 for Encore Majestic.
Correct.
And then I feel like things had just smoothened down. It's like, oh, it was just like we were able to start getting Ernesto stuff in again. And then
2020,
he got it for the Pledge prequel. And then I remember it was like until very like the past maybe year where it was just like, yeah, good luck finding him, man.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, great for you guys.
Yeah.
But what was that like? Because anybody that I've talked to that has, you know, like Alec Bradley, anyone I've talked to that's gotten a number one, it is life changing. But I guess he kind of already had that when he said like he had that summer spread. But it is company and career trajectory changing.
You know, it's interesting. So La Historia in 2014 got the number two cigar of the year. And, you know, I'm going to start with that one for a reason. You know, the whole Perez Carrillo series of cigars, which are the four, La Historia, Encore, Pledge, and Allegiance, they all share a band on them. You know, and on that band, which is very interesting, are two women. And on one side, in the fields of Pinar del Rio in Cuba, is his mother. And on the other side, on the Miami, in front of the Miami Freedom Tower, which was very important and significant to Ernesto when he came here, is his daughter, Lisette, who works with the company. You know, the idea behind this was that I don't know exactly how this came about, where this was done, but there's, if you look at La Historia, that band matches a piece of artwork that hangs in the lobby of our building.
Okay.
And I don't know, so I'm not going to try and guess how that artwork came to light, but it was something Lisette did. And then that idea got converted into, let's make a cigar out of it. You know, Ernesto will sit there and always tell you that, you know, the unsung heroes in this business are the women in this business.
Absolutely.
You know, whether they are working in the fields or with the seeds, or with the plants, or rolling cigars, or sorting cigars, or banding cigars, packaging cigars, taking care of the aging room, any of that stuff, they're the unsung heroes. You know, there's a lot of things that women can do that, believe it or not, we as men are not capable of.
Right.
They see color better than we do.
Yeah, I've heard that that's why they, for like a wrapper distinction, like they primarily use women because they have a better eye for it.
Correct. They sort better than we do. They sort faster than we do. They see color better than we do. And they've proven me wrong a million times in our factory.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're the unsung hero. But Ernesto, whenever, going back to his Liguria days, whenever he was making a new cigar, he would go see his mom and they'd smoke it together. And he kind of the wind. She was the wind beneath his wings, and a lot of, I really like it, you know. And if it was, you know, he'd go back to the drawing board. So it was very important to him, and the whole history of the generations of women that have worked in this industry is very important to our company, this family, and everything we do. Hence, Perez Carrillo was born, and that's La Historia. We had very high hopes for La Historia, but we'll take the number two spot. All right, it's fine by us. And Ernesto then started, obviously, we came up with the idea as a company, what do we do for the next Perez Carrillo? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people may not know this, but Ernesto himself never wanted to be a cigar guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. His passion in life was playing the drums.
I think Lisette had told me that. Yes. I remember that.
He wanted to be a jazz drummer. That's what he wanted to be.
So Michael Herklotz, essentially.
Yeah. But he really wanted to be one. Like, right. He has, from my understanding, you know, he had auditioned for some of the huge names back in the 70s that were jazz musicians, right, and auditioned for him. He was in New York living there, trying to get a gig, trying to get onto a group, trying, you know. And while he was doing that at night during the day to make money and pay rent, he was working at Nat Sherman at the townhouse. Townhouse, but at their location.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the townhouse at that time. I apologize. So cigars were always in him. You know, his dad, his family before that, his mom worked in the fields. You know, his dad used to make cigars with family and they'd sell them on the streets in Cuba. That's what they did.
Yeah.
You know, so cigars was always in his blood, just not his passion.
Right.
Long story short, without getting into too much detail, basically dad one day said, okay, well, you tried that, so now come help me run this company, which was El Credito. That was the name of the tobacco manufacturing company in Miami on A Street in that location you mentioned. He comes back, he starts doing this and realized, you know, I can pour all my musical passion that I have into making this. These beautiful cigars, and I can do them differently than everybody else. And that's why he started this concept, right? And the way he blends in his style. And he learned, you know, so we called the next one Encore. An encore to a show, right? So when Encore came out, Encore was Ernesto's, he, I don't know if he would say it was his biggest challenge to date to his life, but it was a challenge. Right. It took 3 years for that cigar to come to market.
You know, I mean, when you have something, it's one thing to have an idea for a blend and then kind of see it through. But when it's also when you're trying to follow up something and really make it live up to its name and the expectation of, you know, a number two cigar of the year, it takes a lot of fine tuning. And then you maybe you smoke and like, no, it needs more time.
And the whole thing was this wrapper he was using. So the Encore wrapper on the original Encore is a wrapper he had never used before.
Oh, what is it again?
So it's a Nicaraguan.
Okay.
Okay. Exact varietal and all that. I don't remember off the top of my head, but he had never really used it. And he was trying to do fermentation, do it the way he thought it would work. Turns out that what he discovered was a different way to ferment. Mm. And that is what made that cigar become that cigar.
Right.
You know, and the original Encore for me is one of the most elegant cigars I've ever smoked.
Truly. You know,
it's an incredibly great cigar, very deserving of the number one position. It's a cigar that's got a lot of complexity to it, but that complexity is very nuanced. It's not, you know, a lot of cigars out there, the complexity is real, like this one that we're smoking. It's really in your face.
Right.
Like you notice the changes, you notice the different flavor profiles. That cigar has such an elegant subtleness to it that you really have to pay attention. You can't fall asleep on that cigar, because if you do, you're going to be like, I don't get it.
Right.
You know, so you really have to pay attention to that cigar. You know, and then obviously Cigar Aficionado gives it the number one. You know, and it started the trajectory changing. But that was not the one that really resonated, because like I said, it was such... I don't want to really say it was an aficionado cigar, because that's not the right way of putting it, but that cigar kind of was in a lot of ways a throwback to something Ernesto originally was trying to do, where he was trying to develop more of that Cuban-esque, more of that super elegant, super high-end, super, you know, just a unique flavor.
Right.
And it for a lot of people, they still smoke it. They still say it's one of my favorite cigars that you guys make. But I think that when you look at casting a wide net and you start getting into the whole cigar geeks, the guys who are looking for those high octane cigars, the guys [S2] Right. [S1] Who are the punch you in the face kind of cigar, we kept working and the idea of Pledge came along. And Pledge actually has a meaning behind it. It's his pledge to the consumers that smoke cigars that he will always strive to make the very best cigar, use the very best tobacco, and put forth the absolute best cigar in his mind,
right,
and never cut a corner. And that is one thing I can tell you. The man will never, ever cut a corner.
I actually, when you brought it up about Encore, I remember stories, I don't know who was telling to me, I don't know if it was here or just guys in the industry, of like hearing about this release that was supposed to come out from Ernesto, and it kept getting pushed back. Like, oh yeah, it's coming in May, and then May would come. He's like, no, it's not. It's just not ready yet. And people are like, what is he even? Does he even have something? Like, what was it? So, I mean, I think that that's the proof is in the pudding there, that he's like, I will delay a project that I've announced. I'll delay it 3 years.
I don't care.
To make sure it's what right. I promised to give you.
So it's very interesting. And to dovetail on what you just said, we go to the trade show. Encore is there. Everybody's buying it. Ernesto walks up to me and he goes, yeah, I smoked it. I'm not happy. And I was like, okay. You know, knowing Ernesto, I figured, he's going to go tinker with it for a couple few months and then we'll be ready. He goes, not happy. Year goes by. We're at the next trade show. Encore is there, ready to sell. We start taking orders. Not happy. That was the closest I ever came to strangling him in my entire life.
Well, that's, listen, and I've heard.
But I respect that.
I haven't heard a ton of stories like that, but it is that, like, you know, there's the businessman and then there's like the impassioned cigar smoker. And sometimes it's, you know, near the two do meet. Like sometimes it's like Christian Aroa, when I had him on, he was like, if you really love, like, you know, the growing and like having your own farm and doing that whole thing, is like, then that means you hate money. Because if you really get into this for the passion of the product, sometimes all the business aspects go right out the window. Because who else would have done? Who else is, we have a cigar, we can bring it to market right now, we'll sell millions of dollars of it, people will like it. But he's like, no, I'm going to throw all that out the window because it's not what I promised them it would be.
Right.
That takes an integrity that you, that's
it
almost,
it takes more than integrity. It takes something else too, but we won't mention that here on the show. But I think everybody listening knows what I'm talking about. It was a gutsy move.
Yeah.
It was a real gutsy move. And you know what? It paid off. At the end of the day, it paid off. So we fast forward 2 years later, which at that point he had already actually been working on another one. So Pledge was already in the works as a concept. We hadn't had a name for it yet, but the cigar concept, the blend concept, was already in the works. So, you know, we launched Pledge in late 2019, if I remember. Could have been early 2020. With COVID, my timelines around there have gotten blurred. But we launched Pledge, and I remember, it was a spring of 2020 we launched it. Now I remember why. Because I remember I'm sitting in the lounge. It's December sometime, just before the holidays. And I looked at Ernesto and I said to him, and I still apologize for jinxing us on this one. I said to him, you know, man, it would really suck this year, whoever gets number one. And he goes, why? I said, you've got production delays. You've got, you know, COVID. You've got employee issues. He goes, yeah, man, that would really, really suck. And we actually, I'll tell you very honestly to all the consumers listening, we don't know. They don't tell us. A lot of people think that, you know, we're told in advance. We're not. Right. We have no clue. We have zero clue. We have our suspicions.
Yeah. I mean, if you're reading the reviews through the year and you see that in July your cigar got a 94, it's like, all right, most likely this is going to be at
it's
going to
land
the
in the
list.
Top.
It's going to be in the list, on the top 25. In the upper half of the list.
Right. But you don't know where it lands.
Yeah, I mean, those top 10, it's almost like a crapshoot because usually they all have very similar year, you know, reviews throughout the year.
Correct.
So.
Correct. So we had no idea, So obviously they start announcing and I'm sitting here going, this is a weird year because I'm very analytical as a person. So this is a weird year. You know, there's a lot of jumps, you know, like 92s were suddenly getting 95s and 93s were getting 94s. And, you know, I'm like, well, this is a really weird year. You know, we didn't get announced. And all of a sudden it's like, I'm starting to get texts from people going, congratulations, you definitely have it. Da, da, da. I'm like, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, then they announce it. And that second one, when we got Pledge, that changed the trajectory of this company dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, two number ones out of 3 years. Only one other company has ever pulled that off in the top 25 list. Very famous company. If you want, I can say who it is.
Was it Padron?
Yes, it was Padron.
Yeah. So it was either Padron or Fuente.
It was Padron. Padron's the only other company that got 2 out of 3 years. We got 2 out of 3 years. It was the highest rated cigar at its time for number one position. It got 98 points. Yeah. You know, so that was a history mark. Additionally, not only did it make number one for the top 25 with Cigar Aficionado, but multiple other top 25 lists, it got the high spot. You know, so it just, that cigar cast such a huge following, a huge group of people that loved that
cigar.
And
I guess there was also like, there's the blessing and the curse. Obviously the curse being that, like, because it was 2020 and all the logistic issues and the packaging and all this, and just what was, you know, the lockdowns and everything, it was you knew it was going to be a nightmare to now bring this production to the level that it's going to need regularly, let alone if you get number one, but also not having a trade show that year, not having the in-store events to go and kind of plug the brand and kind of get it that following early on, getting the number one kind of offset that. It's like, oh, well, we didn't even need a trade show this year to kind of showcase it because now we could not have sold this any better. Like it's this is the max amount we ever could have sold. Right.
And again, going back to who Ernesto is and the integrity that he has, you know, people were telling us, man, if you, you know, if you keep me stocked, if you do this, I could sell XYZ. And he's like, I am not going to jeopardize the quality, the consistency, and anything to do with that brand.
Right.
So I will make as much as I possibly can, as fast as I possibly can, as long as it remains what it's supposed to be.
Quality control is such, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, this is a business, and I realize everyone's a businessman and or a businesswoman, and you're trying to make as much money as possible. I get it. But nothing kills a brand more than when they overproduce it and the quality goes down. And you see it. Now, they still might be selling more of that product today than 10 years ago, but people aren't talking about it the same. And that, in this industry, that matters. How people talk, how many brands since 2010 have come and gone that were really hot and now all of a sudden everyone can sell it and everyone's got plenty of boxes and the quality control just takes a dump and they're not what they used to be anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just so important. And, you know, obviously you mentioned that, you know, I've had my discussions about Cigar Aficionado a couple times on here.
I know.
But anytime I've spoken to anybody in the industry about it, particularly John, because John's a good friend. I actually should call him this week. I haven't talked to him in a couple weeks. John, Nick Melillo, Tarrant, anybody who I've spoken to. And these are some people who are, you know, John's like the rebel. He's out there on the streets. And then there's people who are, you know, work with CA and like what they're doing. But even to the hardcore people who do not like CA and it should only be halfway or it should only be these things, the exception to their rule is like, except when Ernesto got it. Like, that was the one. Like, Ernesto deserved, like, that. Because John is adamant when I talk to him. He's like, oh, you know, it's all this and that. And I talk to this guy and I know this. Except where Ernesto's were like, his, those two were like, those were the ones. Those were the last times I read the magazine. Yeah.
We do a lot with that group, with Crown Heads and John and Tim with OFC, Osgener Family Cigars. We, you know, Ernesto, they have a great relationship as organizations, and we make a good amount of their cigars for them. And John's had this love for him for years, and so has Tim. I mean, they've known each other from their other companies. Let's just put it that way. We're not going to mention all the names. But yeah, you know, the other companies.
Well, I also got to yell at John that, John, yet another person has come to our studio and you still refuse. I've had Lizette here. I've had Ernesto here a couple years ago. I've had you here. I've had Miguel here. I've had Tim here. John, too busy hanging out down in Nashville. Too busy for me, I guess. And I put his logo right above my head so all can see. And he's too busy. Just I didn't need to talk shit about him really quick.
Well, I mean, listen, are you, he's going to be right next to me out at PCA. Do you need me to sit on him and tell him?
I'm going to stick Jim on him and be like, you get up here and you sit in this chair and you be judged like everyone else has been judged.
Yeah, there you go.
But
there you go.
No, but I will say that. And if you've heard my rants about the magazine, I make sure to put forward that the cigars that are being rated, every cigar that is rated there in the top 25, deserves to be rated there. This is never a discussion about, oh, they're picking these brands or they're picking this guy or whatever. So when Ernesto got those number ones, particularly the pledge, because that one, like they said, the Encore, you heard the stories about like this mystery thing. Like,
yeah.
And I think that I probably read it on Halfway or something that like, oh, you know, he was telling about it at a trade show, but then like it's not available yet. But the pledge I was hearing from people smoking it like over that summer. Because it was COVID, everyone was like kind of just buying stuff to get it sent home. People were sending me stuff to review. And I remember John sending me stuff and being like, hell, have you heard about this pledge yet from Ernesto? He's like, dude, it's fire.
Yeah.
And so when that one came out, it was one of those things where I'm like, all right, I gotta give them their flowers on this one. Cause that was one that should have been number one. Like really, really deserved it. Especially, like I said, the legacy of Ernesto, like it was perfect. And for cigars that he really had a passion for, it was like, it was a project that meant a lot to him and his legacy. So to see to see the company kind of, like I said, get that accolade and have these records 2 out of 3 years, highest rated number one at 98. I don't think anything's beat it yet.
One other one. Got a 98. Nobody's beat it, but one other one matched
it. But still holds the nothing's beat it on the top 25 list.
I, you know, it's funny because when we got the again,
didn't he give you like a plaque or something?
He's very
like a ding.
Yeah. Okay. He's very gutsy as an individual, which I like about him. Mm-hmm. We did a video where we were talking about Pledge and that we were talking about that it got the 98 rating, da da da. And his exact words were, which now I'm probably going to jinx him for saying this, but his exact words in that video was, well, the next one will get 100, the perfect score. I know, I do follow Cigar Aficionado. I know they've never given 100 to anyone. The highest was a 99 for a vintage Cuban that was received.
Well, that's when he got the 98. On Pledge, I was shocked at that number because that was usually reserved for like the connoisseurs corner.
Correct.
Like those vintage, like, 1988 Cuban Davidoff or something
right.
like
or
that.
Or like a Davidoff champagne from 1962. Yeah.
This is a cigar from Kennedy's humidor. Yeah,
exactly.
Like
there's one in the world that exists and nobody can go get it.
Yeah, and Marvin smoked it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he has it. I mean, he's a huge aficionado and he has a great collection of cigars.
Oh, yeah. The humidor at that office must be just
insane. Yeah.
It must be insane.
Never seen it. Would like to one day, but I've never seen it. But
if I see it, I'm taking something.
Yeah. It's probably going to be you can go in, but your hands have to stay in your pocket.
Yeah. It has to be.
My elbows work good.
It has to be like one of the most, like the collection. Because you read stories about when they would have like those big cigar dinners. I can't remember what they were called. Like a Night to Remember.
A Night to Remember.
And then they would do like some Ashton crazy thing that was only available that night. And they only made 1,000 of them. And he has them in his humidor in there. Oh, yeah. It's got to be. That's one thing. Maybe I'll tone down my rhetoric just to get a visit to the office with you, right? And just wear a big trench coat and put stuff in the pockets.
Yeah, well, they'll probably tell you to take the trench coat off.
Exactly. But
no, I mean, it's very interesting that, you brought up, obviously, John and stuff. And one thing that I also love about Ernesto and things about his integrity and who he is, when he started in this business and subsequently a few years after he started, I don't know how many, his father passed away. Mm. A lot of the industry vets at that time sort of took Ernesto under their wing.
That's nice.
And helped him and said, listen, we're there. If you need to source this, come to us. We'll help you. And they sort of, I don't want to say taught him because I don't think the word taught is the right word, but there was some guidance there.
Right.
And he never forgot that. So I've been to the factory. When I tell you names of people, and I'm not going to mention them on the show, but people that are either on that wall or are major brands or are big names in the industry today have been in his office talking to him about tobacco, about a cigar they're working on that they're having problems with, about manufacturing issues, production issues, and he's giving them guidance. He really, truly believes it's one big family. That we are all in one big family and you have to help. Everybody helping each other raises all the boats, raises all the people in the
industry. He's got to be amongst the most respected. I mean, people from all corners, kind of pay their home up. I mean, look at obviously John and Tim. John's been working. I mean, I think John's been working with him since Crown Head started. I think the first four kicks was correct. With Ernesto. And so he's been working with him for years. But then you just saw what Skip Martin and Romacraft did this year with the Quinquagenario or Nario, one of the two.
Yeah.
But that was
have problems saying that name.
Yeah, I think everybody does. And that cigar was on a bunch of top lists this year. But that was Skip, and especially when someone has their own factory and they're going to Ernesto and being like, this would be an honor to work on this with you. I mean, it just shows not only his talent and his skill, but just the admiration and respect people have for him in this industry.
Yep.
A lot of guys have, they're a high level. People know them and maybe admire their work, but there's a few guys where you admire the person. And I feel like Ernesto is the godfather of admiring the person.
Yeah. This whole thing. And it's funny that you bring all that up and talking about John, talking about Tim now with making cigars with Ernesto, the fourth series of Perez Carrillo is called Allegiance. You know, the fourth iteration of that group of cigars was called Allegiance. And the whole idea behind that was when it was interesting enough that the naming of it was on purpose, but how it came about was we obviously, you know, Ernesto took COVID and the pandemic to heart.
Right.
You know, and if you ever get a chance, whether you're a consumer and go to Pro Cigar or a consumer and get a chance to go to his factory or you get a chance to go to his factory, that's his extended family. You know, we all are part of his extended family, but right. when he's at the factory, as I said to you earlier, my dream for the guy would be he just plays in tobacco for right. the rest of his
right.
life.
Never has to leave the building.
Yeah, on this earth for the rest of his life, which I hope is a very long time,
right.
you know, that all he does is tinker and play with tobacco. But he really loves those people down there. They all know him by name. He knows every one of them by name. We have over 100 employees down there. He could tell you every person by name.
Wow.
Some of these people... We had, I don't know if they're still there, so don't hold me to the fact that they still work there, but we had a grandfather, father, and son all working in wow. our factory, you know, and one of those guys dated back all the way to his LaGloria days when he first moved down there. He's been with him for years, you know, so wow. that's super important to him. So protecting those people during pandemic was also super important,
right?
You know, so we obviously as a company said, we're not going to let pandemic slow us down. How can we utilize the people that we know to make and work with us? So this was a difference from people coming to Ernesto that now Ernesto did the same and left his own factory to have two different companies make cigars for us. So the first one is Allegiance that I'll talk about, which is all Oliva family tobacco, made in Oliva at Nicaragua by Oliva Cigar. Oliva Tampa is the tobacco. Mm. Ernesto personally went down there. He traveled down there, sourced all the tobacco, blended it, worked with them on how he wanted it rolled, which is a slightly difference than the way they normally right. roll, from my understanding, you know, but easily able to be done. So he makes a cigar with Oliva. You know, and we could talk about that cigar in a minute, but again, it also got a top 25 position. It was number 5, but Cigar Journal, which is the big international magazine,
yes.
gave it the number 1 this past year. You know, it hit some other different ones out there. Half Wheel had it out there. A bunch of other people had it out there. It's a very highly rated, highly anticipated, worthwhile cigar. But we also added the third series of our Inch line.
Yes.
Our big ring gauge with a Nicaragua that we work with the Plasencia family to make that. You know, and the idea of Allegiance was that this industry should be a big allegiance. It should be this,
right.
you know, alliance or allegiance or a joining of all the great minds to work together to help the industry continue to grow. And obviously in the process also offset and fight the different things that the governments of the world are trying to do against tobacco and, you know, the non-people in our lifestyle who don't understand it trying to stamp us out. When the reality is we're not a harmful industry,
right.
you know, this is an adult product. This is not something that a 6-year-old child is going after. You know, it's an adult product, you know, so the whole idea about Allegiance was exactly that. And, you know, our future plans are potentially that we may continue to selectively work with certain groups to continue to make other cigars that we do. Yet the Casa Carrillo, which is the name of our factory today, okay, that will still be the one that makes the predominance of the Perez Carrillos. Allegiance is just that one side note.
Exactly.
You know, there will be, you know, and I'm not going to name names, but there will be a fifth version coming of this.
Will you tell me off camera?
Nope.
Okay.
Sworn to secrecy. So, you know, but there will be something else coming, and we have plans in the works this year for some new things, which, you know, they'll get announced in their rightful time. But you know, this is a process that we as a company have realized we can only be so big
right.
as any individual organization. And you need to rely on your brothers and sisters of the leaf to help you continue to be better and to
exactly.
grow better and to share knowledge, because he might be doing something that he could teach someone else. And then sometimes someone else is doing something that he learns about and he goes, wow, this is great. It happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
That's how he discovers some of these new tobaccos he likes to play
with. Some of the biggest names in this industry, maybe not the biggest companies, but the biggest names, are all people who have been able to establish good relationships with other manufacturers, whether it's John, whether it's Nick Melillo, you know, or the Newman, like people who are able to partner and work with other manufacturers or growers. Because, yeah, there's going to come a day where you need a wrapper and your buddy has it. And there's going to come a day where he's going to need something that you have. And so to kind of create this community out of it, it's just, it's the best way for the product to be the best all around for everybody. Yeah. Which brings me to what we're smoking today, which is the brand new Encore Dark. Is it dark or black? Black.
Encore Black.
Encore Black. I should have known. I was staring at this. I love the band. Before we get into getting the cigar, which I'm nubbing, by the way, I love the like copper look to it. Like it's such a unique color to really see. You know, people usually, I've seen black and silver, you know, gold. Everyone uses gold, but to have like that kind of copperness to it, that more rustic look is really nice. Tell us a little bit about. Because this is also, I want to say it's a little more unique in terms of the quantity. Usually, Ernesto does, you know, a big national release. This is a little more limited than typical.
Correct. Correct. So to tell you about the band first, the copper actually that's in it is from the original. So the original Encore band is, or the band on the cigar is all copper.
Yes.
So what we did was we added the black in here to give it the Encore black.
Right.
You know, and it's very interesting that Encore Black only shares the name Encore with the original cigar.
Right.
All right. The way the cigar came to life was that we were going to the international show last year, and Ernie, Ernesto's son, and Ernesto basically said, hey, we need something for the international show. So they kind of went quickly to work, and they created a blend called Encore Noir. Now, Encore Noir is also not this cigar. It's a different cigar. But it because it's geared more towards that international palate, that European palate, which is far different than ours. You know, they tend to like more of the original Encore, that smooth classic.
Right.
You know, we tend to like here that kick you in the teeth, knock you off
more
your
body,
seat.
Right.
Yeah, more full bodied, more, you know, you get if we took a pledge to Europe, you know, which is sold in Europe, but
whereas the regular Encore is like
right. Your
entire
in comparison,
book. Right?
Yeah, it's a much different cigar palate over there. If we took pledge over there, they're like, "Would you just make me smoke?"
Exactly.
You know. So here, you smoke a pledge, you can go, finally, somebody made a great cigar. So we played off of that because Encore Noir was such a cool name, and I smoked it in the original blend of it. I was like, "Wow, this is really great," but obviously not for the U.S. market. It's a home run in Europe. I could see that, but here, you know, and Ernie had the idea, his son, why don't we, you know, hey, Pop, let's amp this up. Let's make this a U.S. style, but call it Encore Black, the Americanized name of it. And this is what you're smoking. So what's super unique for me about this, and you guys mentioned it with Jim on the original show, first thing is it has a USA Connecticut Broadleaf Maduro wrapper on it.
Which is tough these days.
Which, again, goes back to being gutsy.
Yeah.
You know, and saying, you know what? That's what this cigar requires. That's what I'm going to put on it. And I will go source it. I'll find it. And I'll get it. And I'll pull from my own stockpiles and get more of it if I need it, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to put this on the cigar. But because of it being tough, that's why it's kind of a different type of release than Ernesto normally does. It has a Mexican Maduro binder on all Nicaraguan fillers from the three valleys of Condega, Esteli, and Jalapa, you know, in the filler profile. When we brought it out, the original initial idea about Encore Black was it was going to have three sizes. It was going to be a full run. Obviously, with the Connecticut Broadleaf being something that is in a limited scenario right now, we said, hold please.
For the quality that Ernesto would require to use, definitely limited.
Correct. So we kind of put the brakes on the whole idea about a full run, and we decided, okay, we're going to make a 10-count box. We're going to make this limited to 5,000 for its first initial year, which is this year. It's being launched right now with 2,000 boxes. 3,000 more will come later. The cigar, every piece of the cigar is aged anywhere from 18 to 3+ years.
Wow.
of age on this cigar, because if you took this on a raw level, it's
right.
I would assume it's unsmokable.
Right.
You know, it's probably smokable, but it just would be such a powerhouse that.
So you can tell in the profile that obviously it has strength to it. It has boldness. It has richness, but you can definitely tell that it's aged when you. It's hard for me to explain, but there's this back end taste I'll get on a cigar where the first initial puff is like you're tasting everything individual, and then as like on the back end of that, you taste that they've come together, that they've like kind of leveled out and merged into this one great kind of combination note.
Right.
And that's what I'm getting with this.
Yeah.
It's this beautiful, rich, chocolatey, sweet, a tiny bit of zest that you taste them individually, and then they come together in this cacophony at the end. It's remarkable. It really is remarkable.
It is.
I mean, we've talked on the show twice in a month, and I'm a stickler. I normally don't do that. Jim told me I had to. But on top of that, I wanted to.
Well, you told me how much you liked it, so I figured we'd do it twice in a row.
No, you want to come back next month, we'll do it again.
Okay, perfect. it's very interesting that, you know, again, I don't know too many cigars off the top of my head that have a Maduro wrapper with a Maduro binder on it. Mm. You know, I would also tend to think that Connecticut Broadleaf, knowing what it is with a Mexican binder, that those two should fight.
They should.
They shouldn't be as smooth as this cigar is. They would fight. But again, I think the aging process is what created all this, that it works. You know, and I agree with you that you kind of get these, when you take that first puff and you hold the smoke in your mouth, you get this like almost, and you guys, I think Jim or you mentioned it, it's like a dance of flavors on your palate. It sparkles. You know, it's just this, you just have all these different, you know, I almost laugh and I described it to somebody else. I said, it's like, remember when you were, you may not remember this. They existed when I was a kid. Pop Rocks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You put, and they were in your mouth and it was like just crazy.
I'm literally getting like a pop, like on my tongue.
Right.
It's funny that you're saying that.
And then you either, you blow the smoke out or you retrohale some of it or a combination of both, whatever it is. And then you wait. And then all those profiles, they just kind of like, on the back of the roof of your mouth and the back of your tongue, they just meld together and settle in. And then that's the defining note right there.
Yeah.
You know, that it's almost, for me, it's very interesting. It's kind of like a combination between like a either lemon or orange rind covered in a sweet dark chocolate with salt.
Yeah.
You know, like a salted chocolate, like you meld all that together because you got that little bit of that dirty earthiness in the back end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's definitely a sweetness to it, but you get this just insane chocolatey note with that little brightness to it, which is kind of that, like you said, it's like a zesty, like citrusy zest that's there, you know, and it just all settles in. And the more I talk, the more I wait between puffs, it's like it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the back there.
I barely had to drink any water. Like it has such a clean, rich, flavorful finish that I haven't even had to. And also, it doesn't like dry out your mouth. Like every part of this cigar has been
well for me.
Spot
it makes
on.
Me salivate.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, and I just and
it makes you salivate for more of them. That's what it does.
Well, and the funny thing is, so I judge every cigar I smoke based on what it does to my palate.
Right.
You know, and I measure it. The defining number one measurement is it making me salivate or not?
Right.
And then if it's making me salivate, do I enjoy it or not? And if it's not, is it one-sided or is it drying me out?
Right.
You know, and I'm not a fan of cigars that dry my palate out. I find them very hard to smoke. I mean, it would remind me of what it would probably be like to smoke a cigar in the Sahara Desert in the middle of summer. You know, I can imagine I'd be sweating and dehydrated like crazy and not want to smoke it. But then again, I can tell you, I've actually smoked some decent cigars that do it and that I will go back to when I'm in the mood for them.
Right.
You know, but if a cigar makes me salivate and I enjoy the flavor behind it, that's, you know, winner, winner, chicken dinner, baby. That's the one I like.
So my last question to you, because also I got to feed you. You came here and you
take
gave
your
us
time.
All the cigars.
I'm not hungry yet.
So this is obviously going to be a little more limited. Is this going to be a one run and done? Is this going to be a seasonal release? Is it going to be maybe 2 years from now we'll see it again? Or is that still up in the air?
To be determined.
All right. All right. I mean, it's going to be a success. So you don't even, you know, I know probably you want to wait for the results, but
I don't have to wait for the results. Yeah. I can tell you that as we sit here and speak, it's shipping out the door. It started shipping yesterday. Some local accounts in Florida already got it today. I've already received texts while we've been together, you know, and this morning that I'm sold out. When can I get more? So, you know, we're repeating something we did, which I don't know if you ever had a chance to smoke it last year. But we saw the success with the limited that we did last year, which will come again this year. Mm-hmm. Same exact blend, same exact number of cigars, same name, same everything. And it was Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
I
think we had that in our top 25 this year, if I'm not mistaken. Pretty sure we did.
You might have, yeah.
I think we did.
Yeah, you might have. And Pledge of Allegiance was... It was a combination between catching lightning and fire in a bottle all at the same time.
Right.
You know, we made, because of what it is, the play on words of Pledge of Allegiance and the whole history, and part of the idea behind that was the history of Ernesto coming to this country, him coming to Miami when he was 6 years old, when he was very young, going to the Freedom Tower, which is, you know, what's shown behind Lissette and the band, and getting the rations of food and his tubs of peanut butter. And that's why he loves peanut butter so much, by the way, you know, and all that, that we said, okay, we're going to honor this country with 1776. 1776, the year this country was this country and it was born. We're going to honor that with those number of cigars. They were all numbered. That cigar went for sale. And the only reason that it didn't get cut off, we actually oversold that cigar when we initially launched it. Oof. The only reason it didn't get cut off at 2 hours and like 13 minutes of sales, I was on the phone call with someone who works at this company and I wasn't paying attention. Big Jim and I were on the phone talking about, you know, it and what he could do with it. And I wasn't paying attention and we oversold it by ballpark about 100 boxes before I literally was, I was like, hold a second.
Stop.
Yeah, put him on hold. I kind of said, done. It's sold out. That cigar hit the market and like wildfire. That thing was gone. You know, this is having the same effect. You know, and I think the uniqueness is that it's, you know, talking about Encore Black now, it's such a unique cigar. It's so different than a lot of what we've made. It's kind of a new venture that, you know, the company is trying to explore more, is breaking out of that classic signature he has.
Right.
Because if anybody is going to be able to break out of it, it's going to be him. The man's been doing this for over 50 years, you know? So it's sort of something that we've all been pushing him to do, which is you are the original pioneer. You were the guy that went and discovered the Wild Wild West in the cigar industry when everybody was making Connecticuts. Let's do it again.
Right.
Let's make this happen one more time. You know, let's re-pioneer who you are and what you are and your blending style. You know, and you know, I'll give you a little sneak underneath. This is not 100% him. It was a collaborative effort from several people in our factory. So he's got people in the factory that he works very closely with when he talks about blends. One of the gentlemen, his name is Mike A. That's what we call him, is Jorge something Alejandro Mike A. Mike A's background is actually Cuban cigars.
Okay.
Mike A was, if you want to ever look him up and go look up Cohiba and the creation of Cohiba, he was part of that team.
Oh,
he like, Cigar Aficionado gives him the credit that Cohiba was his invention.
Oh my
God. Go that far. You know, so he is the director general. He runs our factory. So it's Ernesto, him, and then everybody else.
Yeah.
And we have a great young guy that works for us. His name is Jose Manuel. Great cigar experience. Incredible palate. You know, so the creation of this cigar is becoming more, going back to that allegiance concept, it was a collaborative effort.
Right.
Obviously, at the end of the day, nothing leaves that factory unless Ernesto is 1,000,000,000% satisfied.
Right.
He doesn't settle at 100. You know, his attitude, if I'm not 150% ready for this cigar doesn't come to market. And I can tell you that as a fact working for the man for 11 years, because what I will assure you is I have tried, you know, people tell me all the time, well, Ernesto never makes a bad blend. Oh, yes, he does. He just doesn't bring
you just don't know about it. You just don't know about it. Which is the point.
I've smoked him. Yeah. you know, I mean, and it's funny, I'll finish kind of with this unless you have some more questions. I remember the very first time Ernesto, you know, and I were talking cigars a little bit, and like about a month later, he comes to me and he goes, hey, coming to the office, are you going to be there? And I said, yeah, I'll be in the office. You know, he goes, great. I got some cigars I want you to smoke. I'm like, huh? You know, you want me? I'm like, I'm not even a tadpole. I'm still an egg.
Right.
You know, compared to like, this is the king bullfrog in the pond.
You're
the
president. I trim the rose garden.
Right. You wear the crown. You control the whole entire lily pad, the pond and everything. And here I'm still an egg that's sitting over in the corner. Said, no, I trust your palate. I want you, you know, you smoke a lot of cigars. I want you to try this. So we started smoking, and the first cigar he gave me, and I'm smoking it. I'm sitting there going, oh, you know, and I'm trying. I'm like, maybe it gets better.
Right.
You know, and I'm smoking it. And he finally, after about maybe I got an inch in, he looks at me and he goes, what do you think of that cigar? And I'm like, damn it. You know, and I'm like, well, and he puts the cigar he's smoking in the ashtray, and he grabs two more, and he starts to hand it across to me. He goes, so what do you think? And I put mine in the ashtray. I said, let's try that one. And he stopped and he looked. He goes, listen, you got to make me one promise. And I said, what's that? He goes, if you ever think something I made is bad, you got to tell me. Don't be afraid to tell me it sucks. You know, and I was like, whew. Like, literally the sigh of relief. I was like, ooh, and I was like, yeah, that one sucked. You know, and he goes, I agree. And I mean, they were in the ashtray. I mean, I knew when he put his in the ashtray what it meant. And Ernesto's interesting. If he wants to go back and smoke it, it either goes on the side of the ashtray or he puts it out on the edge of a table. Right. If he doesn't, and we have the big stinky ashtrays that we use when we test blends, it goes foot first, face down, right in the ashtray.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew that was his signal of this is not one I like.
Right.
And that's something about him. It goes back to that humbleness that he has that, you know, if he ever gives you something to try, anybody listening, anybody in the cigar world, if you don't like it, tell him why. You know, he wants to know because he always wants to improve and be better every day.
Yeah. You know, and there's times where you might not like something because of a preference. And then there's times where you can tell like, no, this is beyond my preference. This is just not good. And manufacturers can tell the difference of like, hey, yeah, well, I like that it's smooth and I like that it's well-constructed, but like, I don't like this flavor profile. But I've been talked to before about like, hey, I'm giving you something to try. You have to be honest with me. And a few guys have tricked me and sent me like really bad stuff. And I've been like, I thought it was good. You know, maybe you could do this. And then they're like, no, we know it was shit. It's important to them. It's one thing if they're sending you the final product, then, you know, watch your words a little bit. Yeah. But if there's something like a test blend, like I need you to tell me if you like this or not. It is very important to give them correct feedback because that can make or break, you know, a blend.
And the beauty is, you know, cigars to me are like ice cream. There's so many flavors of ice cream.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to your local supermarket and go to the ice cream aisle. There's like 8 cases of ice cream from 30 different manufacturers with all these weird flavors. You know, I mean, Ben and Jerry's cornered the market on making the oddest flavors on the planet. You know, and cigars are like that. You know, not every cigar is for every person's palate.
Exactly.
You know, there's guys, look, we, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to somebody and they're like, I like a mild cigar. And then they pick the Pledge up. I'm like, put that back.
Yeah, that's not
fair. You know, you're obviously a mild smoker. Let me try this. No, I want to try that. And then I have to, like, I'll coach them and I'll tell them, whoa, that is like our most full-bodied cigar. That is one that you need to, oh, thanks for telling me. I said, that'll knock you on your butt. You know, so smoke it really slowly. Make sure you ate. Make sure you got a full belly when you do it. Make sure you got some something sweet or some Coca-Cola or whatever on the side in case you start getting the nicotine fits, you know, because that is a potent.
Exactly.
You know, if you want to try our mild expression, that's our New Wave Connecticut. You know, try that. You know, well, I've smoked that. I want to smoke something else, you know. So you got to guide people too. Right. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I agree with you. You got to, you know, cigars come in so many different profiles. You know, every manufacturer kind of has a target audience that they're trying to go after with a target flavor profile they're trying to go after. You know, but I think that's the great thing with Ernesto is that he worries about the smoker, you know, and he thinks about his target audience. But at the end of the day, if it's a great blend, it's a great blend. He's putting it out there because someone will smoke it because it may not be our core group, might be those sidelires over here that'll be like, wow. And all of a sudden, they're part of our core group.
Right.
You know, and the other thing that's interesting is, and again, not to mention any specific manufacturer on the show here, but Ernesto works very, very hard. I've smoked a lot of cigars that are incredibly great cigars that he smoked, but it's too much like something we already make.
Right.
You know, and that's a huge challenge for manufacturers. And I think a lot of consumers don't grasp that, you know, you can't just say, okay, I'm making this cigar and then that's great. It sells well. Now I'm going to make another cigar that's similar and call it a different thing, because you really need to differentiate your portfolio of cigars so that they all are unique and different, you know? Right. And one thing that Ernesto does strive for is that every smoker, there's something they're going to like in our portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, because we go from the mild, even though it's not super mild by any means, because he's not a super mild guy.
Right.
You know, he doesn't like super mild cigars, you know. But we have a milder cigar in the New Wave Connecticut all the way up to these potent Pledges, Pledge of Allegiance, Encore Black, you know, much more robust, full-bodied, you know, intense cigars, you know, and everything in between.
No, and he does such a beautiful job at that, and, you know, because I've said it before, like you end up cannibalizing your own brands if you have stuff that's that's too similar. But I mean, Ernesto really runs the gambit, and like you said, Pledge and Encore, such different smokes, vastly different in the experience and the profile, and they were both named number one. So it just shows that, you know, he doesn't, he's not just a one track mind.
Correct.
He's not a one trick pony. He knows how to bring his expertise and what he likes, but doing it in vastly different ways to get that full game, but to get that full demographic. So,
100%.
I mean, this was just absolutely excellent. I'm so excited I got to smoke it again. And please, if you ever have any more, you have me and Jim's address. But Dave, thank you so much for joining us. It's such a pleasure. I hope to have you back here soon.
Would love it.
And for everyone else there watching, make sure to check out the brand new Encore Black from Ernesto Perez Carrillo. By the time this airs, we should be having it on our website by then. But it's very limited, so make sure to check it out ASAP. Make sure to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Comment, like, and subscribe. And as always, keep it lit.